The Paradise Center for the Arts is a vibrant cultural and artistic gathering spot in historic downtown Faribault. The Paradise is committed to offering high-quality visual and performing art opportunities for Faribault and our region. Regular events spotlight some of the best artists and musicians in our area and throughout Minnesota and the Upper Midwest. Our beautifully restored facility includes art galleries, classrooms, clay and textile labs, a gift shop and rehearsal spaces, in addition to a 300-seat auditorium. Visit ParadiseCenterForTheArts.org for a full schedule of events or call our box office at 507-332-7372. Art Zany, radio for the imagination, with your host Paula Granquist, is brought to you by the Northfield Arts Guild and by the Paradise Center for the Arts. And now, Art Zany, radio for the imagination.
Good morning, this is Paula Granquist, and you're tuned in to Art Zany, radio for the imagination. Thanks for tuning into the show that celebrates all things creating and stories, and we are going to tune our imaginations together. We're going to start with a song, and this is a song from Carla Bonhoeff. This is her piece called New World, and I want you to listen to the lyrics and think about poetry as you're listening, and think about the way that the words and the music work together. So I'll tell you all about her event coming up next weekend, but here's Carla Bonhoeff with New World on Art Zany Radio.
Isn't it nice that we can dream of all the places we can't see? Fly over oceans wide, do all the things we never tried. And isn't it strange how you can go back to a home you never know? It's like you were there before, a place you've been searching for. That you have nothing here to fear, but somehow the morning light fades all the things you see at night.
Beautiful. I want to thank Carla Bonhoeff, and she is coming to the Sheldon Theater in Red Wing, and that is on Friday, May 10th at 7:30, and you can get tickets at Sheldon Theater, which is theatre.org, sheldontheater.org, and she is someone that you probably don't know, maybe you've not heard of her, but she has written songs for Bonnie Raitt, Winona Judd, and Linda Ronstadt, and toured with all of those folks, John Prine, J.D. Souther, and others, just has a really big following. And so we're really lucky to be able to have her come to this part of the world. So I hope you will be able to take that in. And she just has some really lovely songs. She also puts her lyrics on her website, which is Carla Bonhoeff, B-O-N-O-F-F dot com, I think it is. Shoot, I forgot to write that down. But you can find her and enjoy that sound, because we celebrate poetry today, and I think that poetry is, in fact, all around us and inside of all of us. That line, the chorus, "The new world waits inside your dream, and your heart leads the way," is what got me thinking about that, because I think music and poetry are related, and that there is that inside of you if you just follow that. And so if you remember a few weeks ago when I talked to Michael Perry, we visited about how similar the writing of a joke is to the writing of the poem. And he has a great story about that in that show. So check it out on the archives, kymnradio.net. And that conversation started because I went to the Content Craft Talk with poet Michael Bazette, and he talked about how jokes and poems are close cousins. And that structure of both writing contains expectation, tension, and then that release or recognition or reversal. And that was really a wonderful revelation for me. I had never made that connection before. And I think he said more. So I'm just going to give you a few more snippets of what he said. He said, a poem is a house made of breath, a little structure, a little wildness. Ah, I just thought that was absolutely so perfect. And he said that prose is good words in good order, and poetry is best words in best order. Again, perfect. So I think that question, what is poetry, is something that puzzles a lot of us. So I hope that helps you explore it a little bit and check out his poetry and attend a poetry reading. We've got lots to tell you about today, because we live in this great poetry town, and we are celebrating poetry with, I can't believe, all of the poets from the Poets of the Northfield Public Library are here. I'm going to turn on the mics and welcome them to the show. We have five guests, all those poets of the Northfield Public Library: Becky Bowling, Heather Candels, D.E. Green, Steve McCown, Julie Ryan. And we are going to celebrate their new poetry anthology of original work, We Look West. And you can get details about them through the Northfield Poet Laureate website, which we have posted online. And we've got some events coming up to launch this book, so we'll mention that as we get going. But I'd love for each of you to introduce yourselves to our listeners, tell a little bit about your poetry and maybe poetic practice and how you view poetry in the world. Just anything you want to talk about to tell us and get our listeners to hear a little bit about your story. We'll start with Becky on the end there and have you introduce yourselves so folks get to know you a little bit.
Hi, thank you so much for having us here, Paula. And I'm recent to poetry. I used to write fiction novels, but I have for the last several, maybe even a decade, been writing poetry, and I love the rush of it. I love the fact that it's often the inspiration of a word or a phrase or something that I see through the window that I write down the first verse, and then I try just to let it go and keep writing. And then I keep going back also. That's the lovely thing of this last month was Poetry Month. And every poetry month for the last, well, since the pandemic, basically, or maybe the year before, I have been doing the poetry month. I write at least a poem every day using prompts from NaPoWriMo and so on.
And yeah, if folks don't know about that, that's the National Poetry Writing Month. So it's NaPoWriMo. Yes, and it's a takeoff from the NaNoWriMo, which is the novel writing version of that. It's great. It's so much fun to have those prompts. It can really take you places you never expected.
Yes, and I enjoy doing that so much. But one thing about it is that it stresses production, and then after the month is completed, for me, it's lovely to go back and work on, okay, this one is a good one. You write a lot of bad poems before you get to a good one.
That's some good advice.
Yeah. And Doug and I are married. We're a couple, and we've been here since the 1980s in Northfield. And we have a son, Zach, who lives up in the cities, and he's a musician, poet, and a union representative, and so many other things that I can't list at all. And we appreciate the community here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's great. Let's move on to Doug, then. That makes sense. Your pairing.
So I can just say what Becky said. We've been serving as the co-poets laureate of Northfield. This is our last month, so it's really nice to find ourselves hawking this book which we didn't know was going to come out at this time. We are really pleased that these coincide. And I'll just say a few words a little bit different, since a lot of the things Becky said about process are similar for me. I want to just say something about poetry community. And there are two aspects to this that I would think about. One is finding the poets that speak to you and that inspire you. So what you read, who you hear, those sorts of things, I think, matter a lot. That's a kind of community. It's a little, can be a little ephemeral and a little evanescent because it's inside you and relates to the things that you're experiencing, reading in particular, and listening. The other is finding the people, if you're writing yourself, who inspire you, support you. And that's one of the wonderful thing about being here with my fellow poets. We've been together for quite a while now, and we love working together. We've grown together as poets, too.
Yeah, we'll talk more about what makes a success, because that is one of the fascinating things about this group. So thank you for being here. Heather, I think, is this your first visit to Art Zany Radio?
Yes.
I think so. So
this
welcome.
This is my first radio interview in my whole life, so I'm very excited.
Oh, I'm delighted to have you here.
My 15 seconds of fame.
You never know where it could lead you.
I moved here 6 years ago from the East Coast, and I was a middle school teacher, and I taught poetry.
Bless you.
And poetry was always my favorite unit, and I collaborated at our town library in Wilton, Connecticut, with a spoken word poet, Reggie Gibson, and he coached my students and other high school kids, and we did a poetry show every year for 13 years, and it was so great working with kids. That's my passion, is getting kids to love poetry and to express themselves.
And when you say poetry show, tell me what that looks like for the kids in middle school.
Well, we would have a theme, and then they would submit poems, and then we would choose the poems, and then Reggie would come down from Boston, and he would coach them on their presentation, and we had kids doing art and music, and we combined the whole.
It sounds fabulous.
It was great.
Yeah. Oh, maybe this will catch on.
Yeah. So then I moved here, and I did a lot of reconnaissance work, and when I came to Northfield, I thought, this is the town, because they had poems on the sidewalk, so.
Oh, wonderful, yay!
And I couldn't be happier living here, so it's been great.
That is so fantastic. Thank you. How do you describe the poetry that you write?
It's a lot of it is just from my own experience, and I'm kind of cynical and dark, but I think it's kind
of
humorous.
The rest
too,
of the group chuckles a little bit.
I try to make the horrible things kind of funny in a way.
So it's that end twist, right? That really is important, and that's something that the structure helps. And it's when you get it right, oh my gosh, it's gold. Right. So. Thank you for being here. I'm delighted. And Julie Ryan is also here. Tell us a little bit about yourself and your poetry.
I am a writer and an artist, and I've lived here for 30 years. And in that time, I've participated in a lot of writing groups, and I love that about Northfield, that there's whatever creative thing I want to pursue or do with the group, there's one to be found in this area. I fell in love with the magic of language when I was a preschooler. And when I was in third grade, I fell in love with poetry specifically because I realized how efficient it was as a form of communication. I love being able to convey whatever I wanted to communicate very quickly and then move on to the next thing. I feel like I'm a prolific creator, whether it's artwork or writing. I love to just put it all out there and sort through it later.
I love what you say about that, because a lot of people get sort of, I don't, it's not writer's block. When did I hear a quote the other day? And I wish I would have written this down. It was I'll bring it to you next week, because I want to get it right. But he was saying that generally the idea was that writer's block isn't a lack of ideas, it's an excess of judgment.
Oh, so true.
I was like, that's so great. So I got to get the quote right and get him credit. He was a rap and just an amazing artist. So we'll play some of him next week. But so how do you get to that place where you're okay with just production, and that, you know, you find yourself producing, and that becomes something that is easy? Well, I shouldn't say easy, but you work at.
For me, the act of creating is a form of expression, whether it's in photography or painting or poetry. As human beings, we all have a need to express ourselves. And I think instead of verbal communication, I gravitate toward pictures and
which
poetry.
Probably helps in your poetry, because, you know, being visual gives you that language to, or you're probably trying to paint the picture, if you will, as you're putting the words together.
Definitely. Yeah. Art and music is almost always referenced in some way in my poetry. And or I'm often visualizing it and trying to capture
playing in
of
all
it.
Those worlds is such a great thing. And I think this might be your first visit too to Arts
it
and
is,
Radio.
Yeah.
So welcome to
thank
you.
Thank you so this much is, for having us.
Thank you
this
to Doug and Becky, who I think probably helped get everybody coordinated and together. I appreciate that. And we also have Steve here. Steve, go ahead and tell us about yourself and your poetry.
Okay. I started writing poetry in high school. I wrote about 100 poems, just to one girl.
Oh!
Yes, and I didn't send it out to anyone else, just her. And when I was reading from my book in Winona, my old classmate asked me about that. He said, "You wrote all your poems to one girl?" And I said, "Yes," and he looked at me and said, "Did it work?" And
right, because I could see that going really either way.
Yes. I'd be embarrassed to read the poems now, but I didn't know how to answer that. I said, "Well, kind of, you know." She was impressed, but you know, it when I saw when I was teaching, I read the I showed the great film Dead Poets Society with Robin Williams, and he asked these prep students, why do poets write? And one of them raises his hand and says, "To communicate." He said, "Wrong, to woo women." You know, so there it is. I felt like I got the origins of writing.
Yeah.
Right, in high school, you know.
It's a flirtation, right?
Yeah.
It's a way to tantalize and draw people in.
There you go.
That's what we need in life.
Yeah. But most of what I write is based on an experience I've had. I have to work with something specific or concrete.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not capable of just writing something up the top of my head. It has to be something I've seen or experienced, you know. And I try to structure the poem around a single image, you know, that, you know, and build it from there. But it's something that connects to reality, to everything. And I try to blow it up, you know, give it a meaning, you know.
Right, make it bigger than it is.
Yes.
Which is a way to, you know, get us to... I don't. That's what I love about poetry, right? To see the world kind of anew, to you know, introduce us to something that might be familiar, but to see it in a new way. I mean, there's just so many ways that poetry is great, and you know, one of the things Rob Hardy did the introduction to this book, which we want to give a plug to him, and he said that, and this was my favorite line in his introduction, that these five poets individually, because they have, I must have missed a word I'll have to go directly to the source because I think my typing didn't happen. I forgot the very important word, thrived. These five poets have thrived individually because they have supported each other collectively. And I think that is such a great lesson. It was, I think, Doug, you were talking about that, finding your community. And that, you know, it's sort of music to my ears to hear that, because one of my teaching philosophy, it contains the line, collaboration fuels the process. I think you need other people to lift you up and to, you know, maybe set you right or give you some helpful guidance. And that's what this group has found.
Yeah, Paul, I just want to say we wouldn't be here together if it weren't for Rob.
Right. So let's hear that story. I mean, because you weren't a group until Rob was poet laureate. And then tell me what was next.
Well, go ahead.
Oh, this is Heather. I went to one of those neighborhood gatherings that they have. What do they call that?
Is that in August?
Yeah.
A neighbor...
Oh, something neighbor. And I just happened to bump into Rob Hardy.
Night to Unite.
Night to Unite.
There you go.
And he, I told him that I wrote poetry, and then all of a sudden, the next week, I was at the Northfield Library with these people.
Complete strangers.
Well, that doesn't always work.
I know. It was just, I feel like I just got plunked down here. It was fate, and it's good fate. So
right, because yeah. It's. I imagine it's like a band or a cast in a play or something that you know, sometimes there's chemistry, sometimes there's not. What was the experience like, and how did you know it was going to work? We'll start with Steve.
Well, I was just talking about the origin here, that I had met Rob at and he is the founding father of our group at sidewalk poetry thing, and and then he lives a block and a half away from me. And then one day I accosted him on the street. I knew he was a poet laureate, and said, "See, I got a bunch of poems. Would you please look at them for me?" And he did, despite all his stuff he had to do, and returned them to me and made suggestions and things. And then not long after that, he had contacted me because someone, I think it was David Walters or Mary Carlson, had contacted him about forming a poetry group. And he asked me if I wanted to be in it. And I said, sure.
He lives in a town where probably a lot of people were coming up to him saying, can you look at this poetry? And
yes,
he said, I can get you all together.
Yes, yes. Yeah, I think that's you guys go there, I'm going this way. Yeah, because he had enough to do, plenty to do, as our co-poet laureates know. You know,
sure. What made it work, Julie, for you? Because you mentioned that you'd been in a number of different groups in our community.
Yeah, for me, I was... So Rob had also, in addition to promoting sidewalk poetry, had something called Writer's Night, where poets could submit poetry, and I was selected for a couple of volumes. And at the readings, I was so impressed by the talent that was reading, that it reignited my desire to be part of a poetry group right here in town. So I also contacted Rob and said, hey, is there a poetry group? And he said, yes, there's one at the library. Come check it out. And I was in from day one.
And I mean, that's been fantastic. What is it that makes the group, maybe people are thinking, well, what does a poetry writing group do? And what makes you successful?
We yell at each other a lot.
No, you don't.
No, of course not. You know.
We laugh a lot.
Yes.
That's a good, yeah, exactly. And you're getting together on a regular basis and sharing your words, maybe some new drafts or some, you know, pieces you're working on.
Right. So we have a sort of standard practice where we circulate, it's varied a little bit over time, but we circulate poems in advance. Comment on them, and we read them aloud at the meeting, and we try to get through all five poems in an hour, which we do with varying degrees of success. I think the big thing that makes it work is we respect each other's voices, so we're not trying to say, oh, Steve, you should write it this way. You know, we're looking at what do you want to do and what are you, you know, aiming at? And then how can we help you do that better? Or, no, it's just working perfectly, or whatever our response is. But we start, I think, with, I think there's a great mutual respect among us for the voices we have and helping each other develop those voices.
That is such a great thing, because I think a lot of people make the mistake when they're, you know, giving comments. They think, well, this is the way I would do it, so I think you should do it that way too. And that's the word that I would pick, or the way I would break the line, or the way I would, you know, tell that story. And you have to do a lot more listening, I think, in a group to get to that place. And I'm so glad you mentioned out loud, because one of the things I read this week was, it was a headline and it caught my attention, because it said, we're all reading wrong. And it was by Alexandra Moe. It was in The Atlantic. And it's an article about how reading aloud is the way that stories were actually meant to be shared.
Yes.
And how essential that is. And once we developed periods and commas and punctuation, then we started reading silently. But this is like back in 1100, or I can't remember the date. You can look up the article, but it was really fascinating to me. And it also talked about how it's like medicine, and that there are, in fact, are some doctors that are prescribing reading aloud, and poetry makes the perfect vehicle for this for people. Mm-hmm. So it was just a really fascinating read to think about that. And reading silently is a different process. So I think that it's essential. And that's probably why the popularity of open mic events for poetry, for people to come and listen. Do you all remember the first time you read a poem out loud? Or how that felt? Julie's nodding. Let's have her.
For me, that was in third grade, and I'm sure the positive reaction contributed to my falling in love with poetry. It was a great way back then to show how clever I was and how good I was at wordplay and how to get an audience's attention while communicating something at the same time. So for me, it was
like
a very
instant
fun experience.
Yeah, and you're lucky you had a teacher who, you know, probably like Heather, who would encourage that, because that's important.
The first time I had to read a poem aloud was my, I probably did in grade school, but it was my senior year in high school. I had an English teacher. He had this tradition going that if he saw you talking to a girl in the hallway, he'd point at you and say, "You're up on Monday," which meant you had to go home and memorize Elizabeth Barrett Browning's sonnet, "How Do I Love Thee? Let Me Count the Ways." And I saw him, and I was talking to this girl, and I ducked into this other classroom just so he wouldn't put me on the spot, you know, but he came right in there and said, "You're up on Monday." So there I was on Monday reciting the poem, you know, "How Do I Love Thee? Let Me Count the Ways. I love thee to depth and breadth." And I said it, some of them were really bold. They said it to a girl with the girl up there.
Oh, my Lord.
I recited mine to the ceiling, you know. The ceiling was really moved, too, I'm sure.
I'm not sure what his goals were with that. It probably didn't help a lot of people fall in love with poetry.
No, it really didn't.
How about any of you others have stories about readings or things that reading aloud is?
Well, I'm just thinking of my mother and my grandmother and even my grandpa reading poems or nursery rhymes to us. And that, for me, was always a great source of comfort.
Yeah.
So just to hear the words, and kids delight in sounds and rhymes.
Yeah. And I think so many of us read to our kids up until they start reading on their own, and you do that less, and it's such a treasured time. And so I see you two communicating silently, Doug and Becky, who's going to speak?
Well, this makes me think not of reading a poem the first time, although the first time I read a poem was likely at one of the writers' nights that we used to hold it at the NAG, the Northfield Arts Guild. And it was upstairs, and there was a wonderful group of people that would come, and there were people there just to listen. and I was scared to death. But when it comes to just reading aloud things, Doug and I have for years, since
1987,
we always have a book. It's almost always fiction, a novel, or sometimes short stories. And we read the book out loud to each other. And we often would do it when we went out for lunch. And people would actually stop at our booth, our table, and ask, "What are you doing?" And they loved it, though, once we explained what we were doing.
Yeah, it's something we should bring back. I think it's a really great thing to share stories aloud. And I realize how fast our time is going, so I want to make sure that we get time for each of you to, you've made a selection from this new collection called We Look West from the Poets of the, and the title has to have Northfield, Minnesota, I think, in it. You wanted to get that to reference the place that we're in, from the Poets of the Northfield Public Library. I'm here today on Art Zany Radio with Becky Bowling, Heather Candels, D.E. Green, otherwise known as Doug, Steve McCone, and Julie Ryan. And we are talking about this. They have an event coming up at the Northfield Public Library. That's Thursday, the 16th of May at 7 p.m. at the Northfield Public Library. Content Bookstore will be selling copies of the book. I can say, as someone who has read all of the poems in it, it is glorious. It is moving. It is funny, you know, poignant, intimate. It's easy to connect to these poems. You've done a great job in selecting poems, and each of you has a section that you're, so you can read from each of these poets. So I'm just delighted that all of you are here today. I don't know how you want to do the reading. Did you arrange an order, or we're just going to go around the circle? They're pointing to Steve, that Steve's going to start. So okay. He's going to be our first reader. Okay. And let us know the poem you've selected. And the
Contents of a Cedar Chest.
That's the one I told you ahead of time that I had picked poems. I thought, but I kept changing my little bookmarks because I thought, what if they ask me, you know, the one that they want me to read? Or that I want them to read, and that was the one, because my mom has this beautiful cedar chest, yes. And we were unpacking it, and I never thought about it the way you did. So let's have our listeners hear from Steve. It's just a beautiful poem.
Oh, thank you very much. Yeah, it was, my parents had a cedar chest too, and as a kid I thought it was really fascinating, and I was always playing with it, get into it, take things out, and stuff like that. And then when my mother passed away, she wanted me to have it because she knew this was a beloved object from my childhood, you know. Mm-hmm. So I kept it. And then it was at my house here in Northfield. And one day I went and looked at it, and it all came back, you know, some of the memories of it. So there it is. Okay. Contents of a Cedar Chest. It isn't the soft Canadian wool blankets scattered with mothballs like toxic hailstones, or the summer sheets absorbing acrid fumes like bad dreams, or the surviving moss attacking father's decorated army uniform folded at the bottom. It's a chest itself. When empty, it isn't. Bands of crimson and orange and russet rise or set every time I open and close the sun, an ingrained sun, free of fumes. A rich redolence emerges, a treasure trove of earthy scents, deeply inhaled, transporting me far away into the North Woods, into the heart of cedar.
Thank you for sharing that. I love that last, you know, when you have that word transporting me far away, because it an object can do that.
Yes, it can.
And that's, I think, what tells people you can write about anything.
Yes.
And it's just, it's so wonderful. And it makes me think, gosh, I wish I would have written down all the things that were in that cedar chest when we were going through it. So I might have to go back and remember. But thank you for giving me that.
I'm glad it resonated.
It really did. You know. So thank you. Julie, yeah. We'll swing the mic and have you tell us about your selection from the collection.
So this is an example of music finding its way into my poetry. I grew up on a farm in the 1970s, and it was a creative wonderland, just the best place for a kid like me to grow up. And I did a lot of wonderful productions at the end of the driveway waiting for the school bus. This is called Candy Cigarettes. We saved our candy cigarettes for cold weather, smoking lucky lights to blow thoughtless clouds at each other, just like the grown-ups we wanted to become, while waiting for the school bus that would deliver us to either bullies and crabby teachers or extra recess and chocolate milk breaks. That patch of gravel with ruts to the left and the right, wrapped in crisp sky, outlined with sunrise, was the one world we ruled. Just us and whoever we wanted to be, calling the shots. The top of our lungs, joining the fun between puffs with jingles about Oscar Mayer, Coke, McDonald's, Band-Aids, ballads about bows and flows of angel hair, country roads, tin soldiers, and begging Billy not to be a hero. Imagined nicotine, sugar, and endorphins laced our brains, and we did our happy-go-lucky dance, blissfully lost in the momentary air we controlled, completely addicted to candy, cigarettes, and singing.
Oh, fabulous. Yes, that is. And that, I am going to guess that that takes a lot of people back. There was a time when those were a thing.
Yeah.
And we can all recollect the moments. But then you've shaped it into something that helps us just see, you know, childhood in a way that, gosh, it just really gets to you. So that, thank you for sharing that. That was absolutely beautiful. Wow. And I'm just thinking of you as a teacher as she was sharing that.
And no, thanks a lot.
Tell us about the poem that you've selected.
Okay,
Heather.
I picked a short poem about my wonderful grandmother who was born in 1897 and died in 2003.
We're all doing the math.
She
can you do it for us?
She was 105 when she died. She was born when McKinley was president, and she died when George W. Bush was president.
Wow.
So anyway, she was a firecracker, and this is called Situation Comedy. At 104, she still smears her lipstick around her mouth, tiny chunks of red crumbling off her face, as she lurches toward the dining room, clinging to her walker, clutching the brakes for another meal of meatloaf, mashed potatoes, and Jell-O with her table mates Grace and Lloyd, whom she secretly calls Grease and Lard. Something has to be funny about all of this.
Oh, my gosh. That was a twist I did not see coming. And it says so much about your grandmother that she had that nickname. And you, I'm sure all of us created an image in our minds of that table at the nursing apartment home. Or nursing home or wherever she was. And it just absolutely, wow, how lucky you are. 104.
Yeah. 105 she lived to.
105 she lived to. Oh, my. Well, thank you for sharing that. I love it. We have so much great poetry here. I'm thrilled. This is such an exciting day. And, Doug, have you picked something?
Yes, I've got something to read. I think it's fair to say, although I know Becky writes in form also, that though I write free verse a lot, I write formal poetry like sonnets and other types of poems fairly frequently, perhaps more than the others. Is that fair?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And so this is a short poem. It's the very last poem in my selections. And the thing about form that attracts me is I often fail at it, but at the same time it can make you see the experience that you're trying to capture and the words that you're using in very different ways than you might have otherwise. So it can make you see the whole process of writing poetry differently. Maybe a little like songwriting, Julie. So this one is a nonet. It starts with nine syllables, and each line goes down. It's nine lines long till you get just one syllable.
A nonet. I had not heard of that.
And it is a little playful with the idea of poetry because it's called Against Metaphor. Moss is moss and not another thing. Woodpeckers, woodpeckers, and not words on the wing. Old robins, robin, neighborly plain bird flitting here and there. Cardinals, red, simple, striking sight.
Ooh. You take us on a journey there, and I'm so glad you mentioned that it's a nonet, which I'm learning, because I think that form poems can be a great entry place for people, because it gives you sort of a, I know I have a friend who like loves to write all kinds of different forms of poetry, which I keep learning about, and I got to tell her about this one, because I don't know that I've seen one of those from her, that... You know, it gives you a structure that you can play with, but a rules. And sometimes having a rule gives you a guide. And so I'd be curious, birds were what you picked here. Tell me a little more about the...
Yeah, I mean, it does come from an experience. I mean, that idea of the
are there poems that are written about birds with metaphors that you're like protesting against?
Well, you know, I just think, yeah, I mean, often birds are seen as something else, but poetry also starts with the thing.
Yes,
and
the concrete.
And so what I'm trying to do is sort of play against the idea that everything is symbolic.
Mm-hmm.
Even as the poem may actually push us in that direction in the end.
But you just can't help yourself.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, there are ways in which poetry is, like a lot of creative work, running that fine line between the fictional and the experiential in our lives.
Mm-hmm.
What do we see? What do we make of what we see?
Yes, and the poem can take you to that place where you might get to see the world anew.
I just want to add to that, you know, I have a philosophy minor. That is a big concept in philosophy. The thing in itself, as opposed to what we think of the thing, you know.
What we give,
yeah,
assign to it.
Yeah, they're often very separate. So when D.E. wrote that poem, I think it's Kant, Immanuel Kant, philosophy came to mind, and I thought, well, there it is. Much better said than Immanuel Kant with all his textbooks.
There you go. That's a big compliment.
And reality. So, you know, and I'm sorry. It's great to hear these people speak. I've read this book many, many times, but when you hear the voice, when you hear them reading,
mm-hmm.
and the way they want it read, it really, you begin to understand the poem in a whole new level, you know. So I think voice alone adds, you know, meaning and purpose to it that you might have missed in your head because you're reading it silently. You
know? Absolutely. That reading aloud is so essential. And then we'll have Becky read her selection for us.
I was wondering if you would let me know the one you chose for me.
Well, I'll tell you which one I picked. It was Grandma's Lipstick was what I loved. For a few reasons. One, because we had just been going... What? Oh, she has... is that what you picked? Oh,
yes.
It is. My goodness. Because it, you know, we had been going through my mom's house, but also because of the names of the lipsticks on the bottom. And it's something my daughter and I always talk about, like if we get our nails done or we're in the store and you know, she'll probably be really embarrassed that I say this, so I'm not sure I should. But she thought, someday I'm going to be the one who makes up all those names because it was so fun. Yeah. And for me, it was so playful with words. And they're just like, of course they're in your poem. So let's show our listeners how you turn that into a poem.
Thank you. Yes, this is sort of an Easter poem, and it started with, and it ends with the image from, we would go out for lunch after, on Easter Sunday, and this was the period of time when women always had lipstick on, and they would often blot their lips on napkins. And that always amazed me that they would leave that on the table. Yeah. Mm. And it was their lip imprint, like a kiss. So I was fascinated by my grandma's furniture, too, where she kept all her makeup and her jewelry. Grandma's lipstick. Smoking in the dusty light of the cinema, Grandma learned the language of makeup from Greta Garbo and Joan Crawford, the Majestic's grand palace, her refuge from the factory assembly line, lured her to the screen, long velvet drapes drawn, fastened with golden cords worthy of a 17th century galleon in mid-sea. In Grandma's boudoir, a delicate white vanity, fluted with gold filigree, stood on curved legs a ballerina would envy. As a child, captivated by the fantasy of treasure, I admired her jewels, necklaces, earrings, glass diamonds, sapphires, rubies, fool's gold, sniffed decanters of musky scents, caressed my freckled cheek with blush powder, unsheathed cylinders of waxy color. Dusty rose, Russian danger, wild orchid, and femme fatale. Which did she spread across her lips those days she headed to the factory for an 8-hour shift? Dusty rose's blunt crown couldn't compete with the slant squint of espionage red, or the hot fire of night's seduction. I tried them all, blue kisses at the mirror. Easter at the diner, Grandma's red lips autographed the napkin with a wild orchid kiss. I pressed my childish lips inside the moist, creamy outline and imagined a stranger's sigh.
It's so delightful. Oh, I love that journey you took with that. And the surprise at the end that you, it's the sigh at the end. I think the ending word is so important in that poem, and that it tells us to just what you're dreaming and takes us there, because we can all relate to that story. We remember those days. And there's, this book is full of those poems. This is just a tiny sampling of the poems. Each of you have a section, as you mentioned, in the book. You can come hear them read more. I assume you'll be reading at the event on Thursday, the 16th of May at 7 p.m. at the Northfield Public Library. You also have events. Get this on your calendar for your friends, too. Tuesday, the 30th of April at Eat My Words Bookstore. I haven't been there yet, so that'll be fun to...
That was last Tuesday.
Oh, April 30th. Oh, yeah. Goodness. Yeah.
That is nice. That was fun. We had a good time.
I'm so sorry. Tell me about the bookstore, because I have not been there.
It's the most wonderful place in Northeast Minneapolis. It's really cute, small, funky, used bookstore. And they've got new books as well, obviously. But we filled the back room, and we just had a great time with friends. They have movable bookcases back there and set up. And it was fun to have Julie and Heather join Becky and me at that. And Steve, we missed you.
Thank you.
I'm just
being there.
He'll be in Northfield. Yeah. I'm sorry. I didn't even have it in my brain that it's May yet, so I think that's probably why I put that there. But you do have another one coming up in August. So I'll remind you again, folks, as we get closer, they'll talk about it at their events. Tuesday, the 6th of August at Blue Heron Coffee House in Winona, which has great connections to this book with the publisher, I believe.
Yes, Shipwreck Books. Tom Driscoll was fantastic, fielding five of us creatives, which were not always easy.
But you put together a marvelous collection. And folks, I do want to talk, too, about the upcoming, which every second, do I have that right, the second Wednesday, is the
Poetry Open Mic Event, POEM.
P-O-M-E, yes.
It's Rob Hardy who misspelled it, but that's fine. and we go, it's our, Becky and I, it's our It's our favorite event, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. People come, they can. You can read your poems, you can read somebody else's poems that you like. You can try something out. It's a very open, fun event. So, you know, come and join us on the second Wednesday of the month. And the new poet laureate, Russ Boyington, is going to run, not this one in May, but the June one. And so we're looking forward to sitting in the audience then.
I will tell you, as a fan of poetry, it's wonderful to come and just to listen, to hear the poems. So you don't even have to be a poet or, write poems. You can just go and take in the stories. And it's such a supportive environment, I feel like. And we get such a great cross-section of our community, the people that participate. And right at the library every second Wednesday, it's a great place. And so it'll be
6:30.
6:30, right. It'll be a wonderful thing for you to come, and it'll be your last as co-polos. So you've done a marvelous job. I know. It's been terrific. But you're still the thing about the poetry community is that it will all, you'll all be together supporting all the poetry in our community, which we wanted to mention a couple of events. I think one of them was coming up in May on, let's see, when is the Leslie Schultz, who has been on the show and is just another extraordinary poet in our community, along with Scott Lowry, will be at May 7th at the library at 6:30, talking about he has a new book and she has one that's coming out soon. So that's an event to get on your calendar. And Doug, you had an event at the end of the month that you wanted to mention.
Yes, I have on May 30th, two wonderful novelists are going to be at Content Books. And we want to thank Content, by the way, for doing book sales at the library as well as at their shop. But this one on the 30th will be at 7 o'clock. Two novelists, Lindsay Stark, Monsters We Have Made, an excellent book. Becky and I just finished reading it aloud and loved it. Beautiful prose style as well. And Annika Rose by Sherry Johnson, who happens to have been a former student of mine, but won the Red Hen Press Women's Prize for this book, Annika Rose. Mm. So, and she also, some of you may know her book, The Girl in Duluth, which she wrote under the name Sigrid Brown. So come, I'm going to interview them. They're going to read a little from their books. We'll have a great time. See us on the 30th.
Yes, absolutely. And so now we have just like a couple minutes left. And so I'm going to ask you like the easiest question. What makes a good poem? I mean, when you're working together, how do you know, I've finished working on this. We can take a couple extra minutes maybe. See how many, no commercials lined up. We're good. I think that's the tricky part, right? Julie, you look like you wanted to jump in.
A good poem is one that transports me to a place, an idea, an emotion that I wasn't in. Mm. So I'm momentarily taken elsewhere. And for me, that creates a connection with the poem.
Yes,
and that causes me to call it good.
Right, and that we were talking before the show. Sometimes we do some wonderful things before the show, even, but about how you need to you mentioned, Doug, find your poet. Right, read a lot of poetry to find the voice that speaks to you.
Yeah, you don't know what you can do unless you see what's been done.
Yes, exactly. And so I say just explore poetry. That's how you find a good poem and meet these fabulous poets that we have in our community and help us celebrate poetry. We think, April may be National Poetry Month, but maybe it can be every month all year long. And so I thank you so much. I think people should ask you that question about what makes a good poem at the event. And you'll have a little time to prepare for for that, because that is a tough question. Thank you for bringing your poetry to Art Zany and for writing this book. We Look West, Poets of the Northfield Public Library, is out soon. And you can check it out at Content or come to the library for that event.
Yeah, it's out now, but it will be Content could have it any day now.
Okay.
Yeah.
So do reserve your copy if it's not in. It's worth the trip. There's so many great poems in here. So thank you all for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Of course. This was so much fun, folks.
Thank
you
very much.
This is Art Zany Radio for the Imagination. I hope that you always remember to add some Art Zany to your life. And of course, in the meantime, until next time, enjoy your imagination.
When it comes to news,
there's no place like home.